Blog Talk Radio.
This is Gee for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, welcome to Gee for Yourself. Thanks for being with us. Always appreciate your being here, wherever you happen to be in the world at this moment. If you're in a life situation that you would really love to change, I want you to listen closely to today's guest. Frankie Picasso is known as Unstoppable Frankie. She's a professional certified life, business, and master coach, trainer, artist, hypnotherapist, founder and host of the Good Radio Network, and author of books like Midlife Mojo, How to Get Through the Midlife Crisis and Emerge as Your True Self, and No Bull Allowed, How to Lose the Losers and Lasso in Love. She's also an animal communicator and advocate for a socially conscious planet. But it was a near-fatal motorcycle crash in 2003 that really became a major change agent in Frankie's life. The crash was one of a number of challenges she faced and would face around that time. And Frankie, I want to start off with your account of what happened during the crash. Your writing about it is so vivid, and I've been on motorcycles myself. I felt like I was crashing with you. Talk about... really.
I would hate for you to have to feel that way.
I know the feeling. I've been over a few handlebars, and I know what it's like. Talk about what you remember from that night. Take us through that night in 2003.
Yeah, it was a beautiful night. It really was. My bike was a Yamaha 650 V-Star, and she was really decked out. I was very proud of her and just absolutely loved her. She had purple LED lights that outlined her with, you know, orange and red and purple flame came out the back with these lights. So she was silver and just absolutely gorgeous. Mm. So I belonged to three motorcycle clubs at the time, John, and one of them was called Acme, and that was one that I rode on Tuesday night. So we went out for a Tuesday night ride, and it was my turn to lead. And so I took folks a different way than they normally go, and we were on a highway in the countryside. And it was, you know, one of those just perfect evenings. You know, I could smell the perfume of, you know, hay and clover and manure and all sorts of stuff out in the country that just smells amazing. And, you know, as you ride, how you feel those pockets of hot and cold air. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't experience anything like it unless you're on a bike. Anyway, we were coming to an intersection, but there was no intersection marked. And it was a local road that went north and south, and the driver ran the stop sign that he was at. And all I remember seeing is a blur of red, just a blur, and that was it until I landed. And I landed on the shoulder of the road and facing the other way, I remember. And everything just went silent. And then all of a sudden, boom, it all kind of crashed in and reality came back. And the pain was excruciating, absolutely excruciating. And the guys who were behind me were freaking out. And the driver of the car was freaking out. And I guess he thought it was a guy, and they're going, it's a girl, it's a woman, you know, and it made him feel worse for some reason, I don't know why. He had his wife in the car, and they had a little baby, and all I could think of was maybe they were looking at the baby, because they lived just up that road. He knew it was a highway. He must have known, you know, you could hear the bikes. I had a Harley and a big, loud pipes on it, and just some really big bikes behind me. So they were very loud, and I can't imagine that he didn't hear it, especially on that kind of silent evening. But he didn't. And so when I landed, as I said, I always thought was pain. The fire engine came first, and they were afraid to do anything. They didn't do anything. And the police came, and all she could say was, the ambulance is coming. Hang on, hang on. And when he finally came, the ambulance came, I just remember saying so clearly to the emergency medic, I said, just remember to bring my leg with you. Don't leave my leg behind. And it just felt like it was eviscerated. I mean, all I could think of is like the chicken legs, you know, after their rotisseries, and they just kind of fall off. That's what it felt like, because my hip, I didn't know, but my hip and my pelvis had been separated. They were broken. Both femurs were broken. I had an open fracture of the tibia and femur, and on my left leg, and bleeding out. I didn't know it. And just by the grace of God, I survived it.
Now, you were hospitalized for more than 5 months, and some really heavy things happened while you were in the hospital, apart from the crash, some things in your personal life, too.
Yes, it was actually close to 6 months I was in the hospital, and the first thing was I went through divorce. And to be fair, I had started proceedings of a separation agreement just 11 days before the accident. So that was turned into full-on fight. You know, he actually came and said, "You've had this accident, so let's not do this, and I'll stick around and forgive whatever." And I said, "The only thing I didn't hit was my head, and there's nothing to forgive, and it's still a game on. You have to go." So he thought that was an opportunity while I was down to fight for a bunch of money and stuff. I was a drummer in a blues band, and so my kids called and said, "Yeah, the band's coming to pick up all the gear." That was disappointing. I was just days away. We were just about to go to Shanghai. I was on the Canadian Masters Dragon Boat team, and we were just about to go and race in Shanghai, and of course, I had the accident and wasn't able to go with the team, which was very disappointing. We trained really hard for a long time for that. And then a month in, I got a letter from my employer telling me that my job had been reorganized, and so I didn't have that to go back to. It's just a series of losses. I got home, and my two of my dogs had gotten out 3 days before Christmas. I had just got home, and one got one back. The other one didn't survive the night away, unfortunately. And then about a week into January, the rod that they had put in my right femur broke, and I wasn't able to get surgery for about a year. So I was walking on a broken leg for about a year. So it was quite a bit of you know, one thing after another.
Yeah.
Plus you're fighting with the insurance company to give you anything. So, you know, my lights were being turned off and my kids were afraid, and I had a really good paying job. Like, there was no reason for me to be that broke, except that the insurance company kept hoping that I wasn't injured.
Mm-hmm.
You go, well, it can't be that bad. And just had to fight for every little dime to keep things going until, you know, you actually take your case to court.
Well, I know
it was a struggle.
Yeah, and it's not unusual for people to say these things happen for a reason. You took away your own reasons. How did you look at all of those things that happened in hindsight?
Yeah, well, even during it, you know, I felt like it happened for a reason. I felt like it was supposed to happen. I never once said, "Why me?" Not once. It was like, "Oh, okay." Because just before the accident, I had really been feeling like I the universe had been talking to me, and I just couldn't hear. I'm like, "I don't get it. You have to speak louder." Well, there was they boomed it to me, you know, because they took me out to listen and be quiet. And I went on a real spiritual journey, voraciously reading all kinds of books on spirituality. As I'm walking down the hall, you know, walking, riding my wheelchair down the hospital floors, you know, once I got to rehab, "Oh, look, there's a Buddhist monk. I just needed to talk to him."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the characters came just when they were supposed to. It was very, very interesting.
Did your spiritual journey, along with the crash, of course, alter your views toward death, especially your own death?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There were days I wanted to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because the pain was so great. And of course, you know, silly thoughts go through your head. And I was on high doses of morphine and painkillers. And, you know, I remember thinking once, "Oh, maybe if I die, then my kids will have money and they'll be able to eat." You know, things like that. I was never, you know, suicidal. It was just, sometimes the pain was so great that you think about that. But I wasn't really, I think I always felt that, you know, my feelings about death have always been pretty much the same. I mean, I'm not definitely not ready to go anywhere, but I do believe that life lives on somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that our, you know, obviously I say animal communication, that our ancestors are there waiting for us with knowledge and wisdom. So,
Well, now I know you advise in these areas. Obviously, you have lots to draw from. How do you handle your own setbacks and those negative thoughts you mentioned?
That's a really good question. I have to be my own coach. And even, you know, yesterday, I was a coach, and I said to myself, so I think one of the greatest questions is, how does that serve me? So when things come up that depress me or bother me, I mean, we can't always all be on. But when they come up, is how does that thought serve you? And that's a really great question for bringing you back to square one. Again, well, it doesn't. So if it doesn't serve me, what's your next step? You know, move away from that, ask yourself a new question, or do something differently, think differently. And it works, you know. Coaching works. It's quite a great modality. It's all about asking questions. And if you don't allow yourself an I don't know, and even if you have to make up an answer, there's wisdom in that.
So you kind of surrender. You surrender into it. You've written a book called Midlife Mojo, How to Get Through the Midlife Crisis and Emerge as Your True Self. We like the words true self around here. This show's all about genuine living. I'm wondering about what people are saying to you about midlife. When I was a kid, there were so many stereotypical bad movies about midlife crises, guys in loud jackets and sports cars and everything. How is midlife looking today? What are people facing in the midlife transition?
That's a really good question. Because we live longer today, it's a little bit different. And it seems that it lasts a bit longer. I mean, it can start earlier. Some people think, you know, what's midlife? For women, I think it starts around 35. Sometimes for men, maybe in their 40s to 60s. But midlife, the idea of it being a crisis, I like to take that away and call it a metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm.
I think the crisis, that stereotypical guy that you saw with the sports car, he happens and she happens. But what that is it's just a way to break out of the socialization of our socialized self. So our socialized self is the self that our parents and schools and society have molded and told us this is who you are and how you're going to act. That's our socialized self. Our true self is the one who comes out of that metamorphosis, I think, in midlife and discovers who they really are, what their purpose is, and to begin to live a little more authentically. So very often we've lived maybe the first 20, 30, 40 years of our life for other people, for our families, because that's what they expected of us. And midlife is really a time where we can look back and see those past 20, 30, 40, 50 years even, and think, I've got another 40 possibly to live forward. How is my life going to change from here on in? Because we do recognize that our mortality is coming, you know, to us, and we need to live life a little bit differently. I think, you know, many of us in our 50s have experienced that. I think you have too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Right?
That's how these things, that's how we get to shows like this, because
that's right.
We
that's
get
how
the
we
slap.
Get to them.
Right. We get that slap upside the head, and before you know it, we're doing a show. So that's, but it's all good.
You know, for me, I was 9 years old, and I sent away for it was called the National Institute of Broadcasting Records, how to be a radio, you know, broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I always wanted to be. And, you know, when I guess I was about 50 or something, I had a call from one of my students, do you want to host a radio station? I'm like, yeah. And that was it, you know, back to 9 years old and dreams coming true. And why not?
Yes.
Why not?
Well, we're very much on the same page. I was 8 years old and worshipped Dick Clark and watched it every day, and you know, the kids and the dancing, the music, and I said,
oh, I love that show.
Have to do that. I have to find that and do it. You're right about going inside and listening and finding that dream. I guess we're kind of afraid of that. Whoa, are we afraid of change? We get comfortable?
We're definitely afraid of change. We're afraid of a lot of things. We're afraid of change. We're afraid of being quote-unquote selfish, And there's fear of change happens to a lot of people. And the Chinese have two characters for change. And one is danger and the other is opportunity. So the danger of coming out of that comfort zone is scary, but that's where opportunity lives. Opportunity, change happens best in chaos. And that's why when things are traumatic, when you have that, you know, going to get your sports car or your motorcycle or your whatever, people look at you and go, well, that's not who Frankie really is or who John is. Well, but that's us trying to change. And so that's the trauma and the crisis. That's the only way that change happens fast.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people, you know what, they need a kick in the butt to change. Otherwise, it's just too comfortable. Why would I want to? Change means I might have to give up my friends. Change means I might have to move. Change means I might need to get a different job. There's a lot to change for people to fear. Yet, getting a new job, moving away, and getting new friends could, or even a new partner, could be the most exciting thing that you do.
Yeah. When I was,
you know, there's good to change.
Yeah.
It's just we fear the unknown. We don't know what we don't know, and so that's scary. As children, you know, we're afraid of the dark, and as adults, we're afraid of what we don't know, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, people say, well, what's going to happen? I don't know. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah. And speaking
of that, I have that personality that loves change, that likes to not know what's going to happen.
Oh, that's handy. That's very handy,
you know?
Yes.
We didn't talk before this interview. I had no idea what's going to happen. I'm like, oh, whatever happens, happens. But some people, you know, I know when I'm in your position, they'll say, well, here's my 8 questions, ask me these, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, a little boring, but okay, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Our guest on this Chief for Yourself is Unstoppable Coach Frankie Picasso. Well, you mentioned the words, I don't know. When someone says to you, I don't know what my purpose is, what is your quick elevator speech? What do you say to them to get them on the right track?
Oh, good question. As I said before, I don't know isn't an answer. So if you were to guess what it is, what would it be? And I like to start with values, too. Sometimes I'll ask people, I'll say, well, let's put that on hold for a moment, and let's look at what you value. What would you say are your top 3 to 5 values? And most people don't know what their values are.
Mm.
So I go, okay, well, let's do your top 10 values. You know, name 10 things that you value. And then let's bring it down. Because 10 times out of 10, what you value is where your purpose lies. Because we need to be in alignment with our values when we do our purpose. So if you value, like myself, I value kindness and generosity and helping people and education. So, of course, you know, what I do and what I'm supposed to be doing is going to lie somewhere in there. And I value creativity and flexibility. So all of those things need to be in whatever it is that I do.
Well, there's certainly fear of change. We've covered that. And again, when I was growing up, there was always that reminder that the fear of failure, you know, this could be failure. If you do this, you do that, it could go wrong. To me, it always seemed like people were more afraid of success. Does that make sense, people being afraid of succeeding?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. People are afraid of succeeding. They're afraid of success because, as I said before, When you are successful, sometimes people who are successful think that they were a fraud, that they can't repeat that success.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that little nugget of fear in there that's going, I don't know if I can do that again. Maybe that was a fluke.
No.
They're afraid, as I said before, of leaving people behind as they advance forward.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid that life as they know it will change. Your friends won't like you anymore. They think, hey, who are you getting all uppity? You know, now you've succeeded. Maybe you have to leave them behind because they want to keep you down. And maybe you're not happy with the outcome. And maybe you think nothing that you do will ever be good enough.
Yeah.
But very often people, just as they're going to be the most successful, drop the ball. And that fear of success.
Yeah.
If it happens to you and you're listening and it happens to you that over and over and over again, just as you're almost there, you don't get it, then you need to go inside and look at what I call underlying automatic commitment. And what that is that you are committed subconsciously to a different outcome than what your conscious mind is telling you.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at it from the standpoint, too, of success is kind of a responsibility. Failure is something you can dust off, walk away. Nobody bothers you about it. But when you succeed, now you have to keep succeeding. It's something you have to carry. It's a responsibility. It's work. And I don't know that everyone's prepared to do that.
No, it is work. But relationships are work. Work is work. You know, people who are entrepreneurs, they understand the value of work. They work harder than anybody. It never stops when you work for yourself. So being successful is work, but life is work. And to have a happy life is work. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Definitely. And speaking of relationships, and this is touchy ground for a guy, I guess, how to lose the losers and lasso in love. Are guys making any progress these days? They should be a little more aware of what to do and say, how to comport themselves, but I don't know.
I think they are. You know, and when I talk about the losers, and that book could be for male or female, and it's really a workbook based on song titles. We took 48 song titles. And because I thought everything about love had been written about in song, the beginnings and middles and ends of relationships in song, and then took that title and coached to that experience, like, for instance, my best friend's girl. So if you were thinking about having an affair with your best friend's girlfriend, think again, you know, this is what's going to happen, things like that. You know, he's having my baby or she's having my baby, different song titles that show up in relationships. What that book is really about as a workbook is showing people how to move from the choices that they generally make, which if they're reading the book aren't good, to how to grow themselves into vibrating at a different level. So it's very difficult for somebody, let's say, male or female, to have their idol as their boyfriend, girlfriend. So if you want Brad Pitt, you're not going to get him unless you get up to an Angelina Jolie kind of, vibration, and vice versa. So what that means is that you might need to educate yourself. You might need to look differently. You might need to diet. You might need to dress better. You know, you might need to comport yourself in a different way and speak differently. Once people make those changes in themselves, they'll find that people are reacting to them differently, and they are attracting a different kind of person. They become a different person. And that's what's really important when you want to change who you are. Now, for myself, for instance, and many people, maybe possibly yourself, people who help other people have what I call a neon sign over their head that, come here and I'll help you. That's great in your professional life, but you don't want that in your personal life. You don't want to have somebody that you have to be a mommy or a daddy to. You want somebody who's your equal. You have to understand how to turn that sign off in your personal life so that you are attracting the partner that you need.
And can we say then that it's better to attract a partner rather than pursue one?
I think that you can pursue them too. There's nothing wrong with being proactive and independent, and there's nothing that says a woman can't look for a man and a man can't, look for a woman. Absolutely, you can pursue. I recommend
okay. it. Point taken. You're also an animal communicator. What kind of experiences do you have with animals?
Well, it's interesting. I was doing some work, doing some mediumship work with people and psychic work with people, and I just have this affinity with animals. And so I took some courses with a woman called Martina Williams, who's absolutely just an incredible animal communicator. And really, it's the same for animals as it is for humans, even though they don't talk to us verbally. They do speak in images. Animals speak in images. And so they're actually quite easy to talk to and understand what they want. Yeah. So sometimes people will ask, you know, my dog or my cat is behaving like this, and, you know, can you tell me what's bothering them or what's going on? And in order to kind of prove to people that you actually are having a conversation with their pet, I've had a conversation, long distance conversation with an animal. You know, it's through your head. You meditate and go into that animal.
Right.
But I've told them what their apartment looks like. I've told them what music is playing, you know, things like that. So they're like, what? Because their animal told me. It showed me. And you know, it's amazing. But thankfully, I've had some pretty 9 out of 10, you know, accuracy ratings on it. So it's pretty cool.
Wow. And animals are cool, like you mentioned. Are they also teaching us lessons through these conversations?
Yes, they do, all the time. You know, I got the most chill dog in the world. Nothing bothers him. He's just like, yeah, all fun all the time. And, you know, animals are great, and they really do respond to us. And you know, if you're sad, they'll come and they'll lay their head and be your friend. And they know how to read up. They understand that, and they do teach us lessons, and they are there for us, and they're absolutely brilliant and just are wonderful companions.
As a final question, I'll ask you to leave us with some words that might inspire someone who's up against a challenge or challenges somewhat like you faced and really doesn't know quite where to turn.
Well, Lee Iacocca, if you remember who he is, he was the CEO of Chrysler. Lee said, "We are continually faced by great opportunities disguised as insoluble problems." I love that. My dad said to me once, "Anybody can do it with money." And what he meant was that if you have money, sure, you can buy the solutions, you can buy stuff. But what would you do if you didn't have money? I love that because it's always forced me to be really creative. Even if I had money, it's like, what could I do? Okay, how would I do this without it? You know, how can I be creative? And so it's really interesting to force yourself to look at situations that you're struggling with and find the answer. If I was really struggling with something in my personal life, I would go to my friends and I would ask them, tell me, you know, three words, let's say, do a 360 on yourself. Tell me three words that you think of when you think of me. And if all of your friends come up with the same three words and maybe they're not the best thing for you, it's an opportunity for you to change. Or if they're really great, then you can say, oh, wow, they really think that. That's a confidence booster. And you can look at that and think, okay, well, maybe there's my answer in there.
Okay. Give us your website.
You can go to www.theunstoppablefrankiepicasso.com, or these days I'm at thegoodradionetwork.com.
Oh, good. A plug for the radio. We like that. So much to think about, to work through. Thank you for being here, Frankie, to offer the help and support for making real change in our lives. I'm guessing you're keeping busy with new projects, and so I'll invite you to come back sometime and update us on what you're up to. We'd enjoy that.
Thank you so much, and thank you for doing what you do, because I know that you have really amazing guests that offer a lot of wisdom, and I'm sure that all of your listeners are getting brighter every day.
We do have great guests, and we just added that, one more today. So thanks again, and we will talk to you.
Thank you, John.
As usual, we'll have a link to Frankie's website on the Start Here page of cheeforyourself.com. Lots of ways for you to hear the show, either from hosting sites like blogtalkradio.com and YouTube. And I want to remind you, too, that TuneIn.com, if you've been there to hear the show, TuneIn is compatible with Apple Watch, Apple CarPlay, Android Wear devices, and Android Auto. So if the Apple Watch is something you're into or about to get into, it's one of many ways you can listen to these great guests in more places than ever before. So check out TuneIn.com. Also, make sure when you go to CheatForYourself.com, you enter your email address into the box that's provided, and you'll be a subscriber, and that way you'll get all of the updates for future shows and information on all the guests to come. That's going to do it for today. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.